I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
3, 2, 1, boom. I don't even think I do it that way, but what's up, everybody? It's your coach. Welcome back to the Coach HP Show, the number one positivity podcast in the world, on the planet, en el mundo. 100% garantizado, 100% guaranteed. No importa el idioma, doesn't matter the language, doesn't matter what time of day you listen to it, it is the number one positivity show on the internet. Nobody is slanging more positivity 24/7 nonstop than the coach through this show, through the guests I have on. If you haven't yet, which I have no idea why you have not, please subscribe to the show, subscribe to the movement, subscribe to the mindset that the winning is in the giving, subscribe that positivity wins, might not win at this moment, but it wins long term, long run. Subscribe to building relationships across the board, relationships, optimism, positivity, good vibes, good energy. With that said, today's guest on the Coach HP Show, episode 91. This dude started ground level, started from the bottom, and worked his way up, worked his way up, worked his way up to create a tremendous, not only does he have a tremendous product, quality, brand, but the product is actually good. It's fun. He sells fun. He is fun. I'm a big fan of this dude. I think he has a big, big, big future ahead of him. He's already had one win, huge win under his belt with his company. But I think this dude's the future. He's involved. He's in the mix. He's ground level. He's shaking hands. He's getting to know people. He's winning people over. He's charismatic. He's doing everything a winner who double wins, who becomes legendary, is doing. So without further delay, on this episode of the Coach HP Show, episode 91, episodio 91, none other than my man Josh Miller, co-creator of Owens Mixers. Let's go.
Don't got enough to go cop it. I'm about to take off like a rocket. Houston, we might have a problem, but that don't mean money will solve them. No, that don't mean money will solve them. Woke up dreaming of the commas, and I got $100 in my wallet. I've been trying to make it, do it for my mama. I ain't with the fake and never with the drama. She said,
run. 3, 2, 1. Boom, Josh, and we're on. Dude, we saw Sir Mix-a-Lot, man. When did you think of that name?
You know, I can't take full credit for that. Before Sir Mix-a-Lot, I was the ketchup king, and I needed to stay within the royalty of names. And a friend of mine, when I was coming up with Owens Mixer's idea, she goes, you know what your name has to be? And I go, no, what? And she goes, Sir Mix-a-Lot. And I was like, oh, my God, like, how much do I owe you for this right now?
Josh, your brand, bro, it's fun. It's fun. How much responsibility do you feel to be the fun guy?
I'd say it comes natural. Like, you know, what's funny is if you ever meet my brother-in-law, and he's my business partner. We've known each other since like Little League baseball, mind you. We're very different people, but we share a competitive spirit. But I definitely like to have a lot of fun. And I think that the goal of the brand is to be approachable to everyone. And when we say summon your spirits animal, I mean like summon your spirits animal. Like, let's see it.
Dude, I love that. Talk to me, Little League. What position did you play?
What position did I play?
Yeah.
So I was center. Well, I was shortstop until I had too many errors. Probably moved me to center field. I found the best use for my ability was the knuckleball. So I would literally eat up innings. Like they would throw me out there, and I'd be out there, and sometimes people would just hit an absolute bomb off me, or people would just be missing left and right. I didn't know where it was going. That's the beauty of a knuckleball. It's somewhere
nobody does.
Nobody knows where you're going,
dude. Yeah. To what age did you pitch?
So I made it all the way till about freshman year of college. I was trying to live out a dream with baseball at Sonoma State. Quickly realized college sports weren't for me. Coincidentally, my brother-in-law played football at UCLA all 4 years. We're a little bit of a height difference. He's about 6'5". I'm about 5'7". So,
dude, and you're a California guy, right?
Yeah, we're both from the Bay Area. Portola Valley, to be exact, right just south of San Francisco, 45 minutes.
Are you a Giants fan?
You're going to think I'm crazy. I'm all Boston sports. My entire family's East Coast, and I was like deeply rooted in Boston history. So I didn't stand a chance. But if I were to choose a secondary team, it was always the Giants. I saw Barry Bonds' 70th, 73rd,
nice.
And one other career milestone. But yeah, love the Giants.
Who's your favorite Red Sox player?
So I was bummed. He just left because I went to University of South Carolina. Jackie Bradley Jr. Was my most recent favorite Red Sox player. But like, I would say Nomar back in the day was like just like the grittiness and how aggressive and competitive he was. And then, you know, people forget Manny Ramirez when he was on the Red Sox was a terror. Like
savage, bro. Savage.
Dude was scary coming up to the plate. Yeah. You just felt like, I remember when we got him from the Indians, I just remember thinking to myself, holy God, we're about to be that team. And then in 2003, if you remember when the Yankees won.
Of course.
It was the most devastating experience of my life as a sophomore in high school.
Dude, a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of Big Poppy's success has to do with Manny.
Because you got more, yeah.
Manny is a hitting nerd. He doesn't look it with the dreads and he plays crazy in the outfield, but he's a hitting nerd. And that took Big Poppy to a whole new level, man.
Well, a lot of people also don't realize that the type of pitches that Big Poppy saw because Ramirez was also there.
Yeah.
You know, you got to remember in a lineup, people strategically pitch to certain people a certain way. They walk a lot of people. But when you have Ramirez, keep in mind, Dustin Pedroia was there at leadoff or at the two spot. Then you got usually Ramirez, then Big Poppy, and then they had some other great hitters in there.
You have my boy Mike Lowell there, bro.
There you go. So, like, dude. I understand the type of pitches that Big Poppy was seeing. He's hitting dingers.
Do you ever think you'd own a mixer?
I always thought that I would own my own brand. I can't. You know, I came up with an idea in college called Jungle Juice, and I wanted to like essentially package spirit with mixer in the same package where you dump them into a container. My idea was I have a container, you put a spirit in there, you put the Jungle Juice mixer in there, you pull those out, and then you dump those into the container. And I thought of that idea in college, never went through with it, but it's funny how it comes full circle to where now I'm running a craft mixer brand. A little more upscale.
So, here's a fun fact about me, bro. I worked 4 years in the nightclub business in Las Vegas.
Okay.
I have never had a drink in my life.
I love that.
So
you're the best people to hire.
Yeah. I'm telling you, especially in those kind of spots.
What night?
I started off as a promoter at Hyde in the Bellagio.
I remember Hyde really. You remember Hyde? Well, there's that steak restaurant that overlooks the Bellagio fountains.
Prime.
Yeah.
Prime.
Very so
Prime, yeah, Prime's
where the promoter tables were, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, yep. Sir. So I started off as a promoter, then I worked my way up to be director of customer development. And I lived at the Mandarin Oriental right there at the Aria, which was the best, bro, for 4 years.
Yep.
A mixer. Is a mixer alcoholic or is that non-alcoholic?
Completely non-alcoholic. So we don't want to compete with alcohol. We want to be liquor's best friend, right? Like we want to be the Robin to your Batman.
The peanut butter to the jelly.
Peanut butter to the jelly, baby.
I like it. When you are in this world, which I love, man, because I think of you guys and it's just fun. And the whole thing, I love The donkey. What's up with the donkey? Who thought of that?
Yeah, so our first product was a ginger beer with lime juice in it, so geared towards Moscow mules. And we wanted to create a mascot for the brand because, candidly, you see too many brands out there with BS stories, right, where they're like they try to make up such a fictitious, ridiculous story to where the consumer is much more educated today and they read right through it. And I felt like the goal of our brand, when talking with Tyler, we were like, what is our ethos? Well, we are stubborn for quality, just like a mule would be stubborn. We want something that carries our portfolio entirely, meaning, and the mule, you know, is by nature a pack mule, you know, you carry stuff.
Right.
And then more importantly, we want something that was easy to understand and see. So what we love about all of our packaging is you'll notice our mule is the focal point of all the packaging. Ingredients are on the bottom, brand name on the top, and then on the very top, what the purpose of the product is, what it pairs with. So we literally put the mule on there so that it would be easy to recognize in retail, because a lot of people don't realize majority of retail shoppers, it's roughly 65% women, right-handed. You basically, when you look at a shelf, you go left to right, just like when you read a piece of paper. So when you see us on a shelf, you'll always notice we're always perfectly lined up, color coordinated. We're very specific about how we are positioned on the shelf. And more importantly, that branding is what people always say when I say, oh, I make cocktail mixers. I'm always flattered when people know it right away. But I'll say, you know, the one with the mule on it or the donkey. And they'll smile like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've seen it on Barstool or whatever. So that was the purpose of it. But it's funny because we were going to put my great-great-grandfather directly on the front of the logo as the symbol, right? My great-great-grandfather was an Irish immigrant, migrated to the United States in 1864, opened the first bar general store in Portland, Maine with his brother. The heritage behind this is absurd. So we named it Owens. We go to like make a caricature of him to put him on the label. And I go, this just looks like a boring white dude. Like, this isn't fun.
This ain't Dos Equis.
You know what I mean? So I was like, let's do something out of the box here. If everybody else has got like weird like symbols and initials, let's put a mule on there. Let's make us fun. So that's how we got to it.
Bro, you mentioned something that is dear to my heart. So you mentioned Barstool. The first guest on my show was Erica Nardini. I was on her podcast.
Queen.
What a smart move that was for you guys, man. Talk to me through that whole process. How did you think of that? How did you come up with that? What's the deal like? That was huge, man. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So Barstool is a nonstop 24/7 engine that seems to get more powerful by the second. Like I said, majority of my family's from Boston. I actually lived in Boston for 4 months. I remember like Barstool blackout parties. And I was living in Southie at the time. Coincidentally, our distributor in Massachusetts would sponsor all the parties that they would have in Boston that Dave was throwing back in the day. This is before the Barstool that you see today, the polished, you know, really like well-balanced machine that they are today. Back in the day, Dave still has the mindset of a complete hustler and get stuff done. But I was following it for a long time. Fast forward to, I'd say, just a couple years ago, I had been really admiring what they were doing with podcasts, because similar to what you're doing, Coach, is like you're captivating an audience through audio, but you're also bringing visual components of video, and then you can slice up, you know, different segments of podcasts. And what I love about it is for advertisers, it gets you into very specific audiences. When we were looking at Barstool and we were looking at our brand, I knew we had the best liquid of any mixer out there. And more importantly, Tyler and I were talking about the only thing in our way right now is overall brand awareness. When people try our product, we have found that not only do they repeat buy, but they are more inclined to try the rest of our line. So if they start with ginger beer, then they get the grapefruit, they get the margarita, whatever. What we really needed is higher impact to a cult-like following, aka Barstool's following. Barstool has the most loyal, aggressive, and positive fans out there. And what we really wanted to do is tap into an audience where we could create that baseline type cult-like following for Owens. So Barstool people have been coming to our events over the years. It's kind of crazy. We would throw these parties not like the Barstool blackout parties, but it would be like really like cool cocktail parties at Tao, at Up and Down, at One Oak. We do it at PhD. And so they would start coming to our parties and they would always be like, we got to work together. We got to work together. And I'm like, yeah, I just, you know, we're not a national brand yet. When we get to that phase, we're going to be ready for you.
Right.
I kid you not, in 2019, towards the tail end, we get roughly 91% of the U.S. population covered with distribution. We're finally in about 6,500 retail stores. And I said to Tyler, I was like, we got to work with them now. Like now more than ever, we're probably a little bit premature with this, but like, let's get in with them.
Fuck
now.
It. Let's go. Let's go.
Ride. Tyler was like, dude, you sure? I was like, trust me, we got to go for it. And to Tyler's credit, he just went full force. He's like, let's get a deal done. I knew Riggs through a couple mutual friends, and Riggs was going to be down at Super Bowl, and their sales team was like, hey, you should come down to Super Bowl, golf with Riggs. Let's all meet up. I go down to Super Bowl 2020, so right before the global pandemic hits, and I go golfing with Riggs.
Is that the one here in Miami?
Correct.
Where'd you guys go golfing?
So we played at it's in North Miami Beach at totally blanking on the course. It's like 20 minutes from where that Four Seasons is, or like 15 minutes.
Okay.
It's yes. In Miami Beach. It's like North Miami Beach.
Yes. Did you like it?
Gorgeous course.
Okay.
I mean, I just picked up golf, so that was not a fun experience, but there was tons of Owens, right?
Right. That's what matters.
And the best part is Riggs goes, God, this mint cucumber lime is lights out. And he's like housing cocktails. Mind you, they had one of like the Barstool parties the night before, so we're all like hurt.
And on fire. You guys are on fire.
I'm like, we gotta start, you know, boozing up. Turned to Riggs and I said, you know, you talk about transfusions nonstop as your favorite cocktail. Why don't we come out with a transfusion mix for you? He's like, what do you mean transfusion mix? I go, what I like about Owens is you can pick whatever vodka you want, whatever tequila you want, endless choices of spirits. Just choose your Owens mixer to pair with it. His eyes lit up. I go back to the sales team. I go, Riggs is in. Like, you know, there's the guy that's going to be the spokesperson for the brand and foreplay in general. And literally we put a deal together in under a month. And then we launched the partnership in April 2020, middle of, or start of the pandemic.
I remember seeing it because I remember seeing the donkey. I loved the black with the red and the donkey. I remember seeing it on the rundown.
Rundown, we did it. I mean, so we have a multi-year partnership. We're the exclusive cocktail mixer of Barstool Sports. We came out with that co-branded product, the Transfusion Mix. We sold 1 million cans in the first 120 days. Now, wow. Today, it's in 17,000 stores. That type of availability.
Talking about stores, I saw you did something with Publix. What do you know about Publix, bro?
Publix, pub subs, baby. $5, or maybe it's six now. But
how do you know Publix? How do you know about Publix? Because that's not West Coast thing.
Dude, Pitbull, Mr. Worldwide. I go to every retailer in the world. You know what I mean? I got to know it. But Publix, one of the best retailers in the world, by far.
Out of Lakeland, It's comparable. I lived in Los Angeles for 6 years, so it's almost like a Food Lion. I'm sorry, Ralph's kind of thing.
Ralph's is a really high quality Kroger banner.
So it's like it's right there under Whole Foods. You know, like Whole Foods being the organic, whatever.
What I like about it is the price points are good.
It's easier, yeah. Of course.
And like, you know, when I say pub subs,
yeah,
those sandwiches are fire.
Yeah. So my dad worked for Pepsi for 30 years. As a merchandiser. So I used to go when I was small, bro, and stock up the shelves. It sucks, but I used to do that.
DSD, you're going in and making sure if there's a hole and your product's supposed to be there, you're measured on whether that's
dude, built. We had blue collar as can get, buddy. You don't understand if at the time, if you needed two Sunkist and the Sunkist are under 10 Pepsi things, you got to move all 10 to put the two things in. Crazy. You mentioned something there about the order. Of stuff. Does that mean you guys train all your employees to this is how I want it done? Everything.
Yeah. I mean, my background, and it's funny that you mentioned the Pepsi thing. I worked for Honest Tea back in the day before Coca-Cola acquired us. I was going into Kmart's selling floor stacks at the age of 19, 18.
Wow.
It was wild, dude. And I would go with these Coca-Cola reps and I loved it. I'm with like 45-year-olds. I'm like 18.
You're 18, man.
Albany, New York. I'm in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'm in the most random places in the world, but I'm like with Coca-Cola distributors. And at the time I'm like, this is the shit. Like it's I get to go deal. In and sell product. And I would, and what they always loved is I would fix the shelves while I was there, whether it was my product or theirs, I'd always make sure. And they go, that's the attention to detail you need to have throughout your career. And that's really where I learned retail programming. But the way we train people, when I worked at, yeah, I'm getting all over the place, but Tesla.
Go everywhere you want, bro.
I had the benefit of being the first intern at Tesla on the sales and marketing side.
Wow.
And I remember back in 2000, and this was 2010. This is like when Tesla maybe wasn't going to make it or not. You know, they were burning tons of capital. They'd just gone public. The stock was only at like $25 a share. Mm-hmm. What I always admired about Tesla is they were so particular about how they train people and so methodical about their sales pitch and how they walk through each item in the exact order. And you could stray away a little bit, but you're basically in an outline. And the reason being is that they would always say, we don't want to confuse the customer with the facts. We want to make sure that we give them the perfect picture of what to expect when you're buying this car, because it's a technology. And if we come off as the car salesman, used car salesman, all we're doing is falling into this like spider web of negativity of the industry. And we want to be looked at as a technology company first and a car company second. And that always resonated with me, where when we're talking about Owens, impact statements and facts are very key, because I like to be a personality driven seller, but based on facts. If I'm telling you that you're going to sell more Moscow mules by switching to my ginger beer and lime versus another ginger beer, I want to back it up with exact stats on accounts that have switched, how much the increase is created, and be able to say to them with complete certainty, this is a better business choice for you. When you get to that level of selling, the sky is the limit if you put a
personal game over, bro. Game over, game over. It's so funny you said that. So Steve Wynn used to own the Bellagio. He used to own
Vegas.
A lot of them. When he owned the Bellagio, bros, when the Bellagio was gangster, like it was the thing. He would be the type of guy that he trained everybody to look at the lights in the ceiling, like these small details. Everybody like this. The minute it went to MGM, completely different. When it went corporate, it completely changed, bro. So I understand when people have that kind of attention to detail, to the service and the standard and the experience, that, bro, you can't lose. When you do that with a good product, forget about it.
I think the other huge thing for that is your respect for other people, right? Yeah. Like, what I really admire about great companies and brands and sales leadership is that they make every person in the room feel important. And I think that that attention to detail to make sure, like, even when someone is like, you know, let's say you're at a hotel and you're like, hey, can I get a quick water? And someone grabs you water. You need to make them feel like them getting you water was a big deal to you, because then they're going to want to do their job with a smile and stuff like that. But I would say that what I've just realized about all these companies that I've had the pleasure of working for is that, like, the attention to detail is what you're describing with Steve Wynn is the most important piece of this. And also not misrepresenting, right? Because then you get caught in something. It's not a fun thing to be called out on.
No, you're absolutely right, dude. I saw an IG story thing of you playing golf. I believe it was yesterday.
Yeah.
You play lefty?
I'm a hefty lefty.
Like me, bro. You lefty. I use the two gloves, though. I rock the two gloves.
Tommy two gloves, huh?
Yeah, dude. I don't know. I like the baseball thing.
Keep your hands clean.
I rock the two gloves. What type of driver do you use?
So did O.J. Simpson. I think he used two gloves. No.
He did. I think he used one. Yeah. Or they found one. They found one.
If it fit.
They found one.
I use a TaylorMade sim. I've not upgraded to the sim 2. I will say the technology might be too good for me to be swinging.
You're playing blades?
I am switching to P790s, not true blades yet. I'm on Ping G410s right now. So a little bit of a cavity, so the forgiving shots.
A little forgiving, that's how you got to do it. What type of ball are you using?
Right now I'm on, honestly, the trend of TPX5s,
okay.
TaylorMades. But I will tell you, I met a really cool brand called Cut Golf that specializes in making like Pro V1 similar type balls.
Nice.
I met the guy Sam, and I got to tell you, I really enjoyed chatting with him, and he's a hustler. I like to support a lot of the smaller brands if I can. With golf clubs, there's not really a lot of small brands out there because it's so expensive. You saw TaylorMade yesterday sold for like $1.6 billion.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So no, you can imagine how hard it would be to start a golf club company right
to
now.
Do a startup, man. I'm a fan of golf, man. I love golf. Just the vibe of it and the overall thing is, to me, is awesome. Social media. You mentioned their social media, dude. You're a guy now. Good looking dude, charismatic, young.
Who's paying you?
Nobody, buddy. This is the most positive show on the internet, brother.
I love it.
Social media, man. How do you view it with you? You're starting now to do more podcasts, more interviews, more stuff as the news came out and stuff like that, man. Do you see it like, okay, I'm going to attack this. I'm going to make this fun. I'm going to be more business. How do you think about this? How do you feel about this?
Candidly, I don't like the glorification of my like personal Instagram and stuff like that and presence on social media. I like the attention to be drawn towards the business because ultimately that's why I got in this.
Right.
I think when people are clout chasing and going out there for themselves, it's a slippery slope of like, if you get a taste of the celebrity, then does it become your focus? And does it like almost like create this like facade where you're not really who you are? And I don't like that. I like the idea of being pure and true to yourself. I do love the idea of being active with podcasts and telling our story because there's so many entrepreneurs out there that don't realize that they're not the only ones going through a struggle. There have been dark, dark days at Owens and even recently in last year and throughout the time. And you get anxiety while you're doing it because you're like, am I doing this right? Are we going to make it? There's all
How old are you now, Josh?
I'm 31.
So you're a baby. When it was that dark, bro, and you're sitting there with the brother-in-law and you're like, bro, this is not looking good. What's going through your head?
I'm thinking about every person that's bet on me to win. I'm not thinking about anybody that's betting on me to not win, right? Or against me. Thinking about my uncle, my mom, my friends that invested, stuff like that. And I'm like, and what I love about Tyler, phenom athlete, but also sharpest person I've ever met. We look at each other and we're like, we're not going to fucking fail. Like, sorry, it's not an option. I said to Tyler, I will literally walk up and down the streets of Manhattan selling door to door like a vacuum salesman until we make our money back if failure was in sight, right? Like there's no scenario where we don't succeed, in my opinion. And you can think that. I'd be lying to you if that fixes the feeling of anxiety and stress. It doesn't. But somebody really like that it stayed with me was like, you know, you live in the world of back against the wall or in between a rock and a hard place, and that's where you thrive the most. You may not like it, but that's where you find yourself with the most success. If things are going too well and you're not stressed, something is wrong. And you just
because you're not pushing yourself and you're not doing. It's funny because in the nightclub world, every night is like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because, oh, we had a great night. Cool. But then you're open again tomorrow and you got to sell tables and you got to create the experience.
Attention span, right?
It never, never, never stops, man. And it's hard because the customer, when I was there, everybody, Hakkasan, Encore, all the places had really big DJs. Omnia, Marquee. And we didn't have a budget for that. So we literally had to create environment based. We were open format, which helped us out, but it was literally the view of the fountains and the vibe we created inside.
And the people that are there.
Exactly. With the vibe of us creating the vibe and hosting and being able to make you feel at home. And if you walked in right now, we'd have Owens on the thing. We have a donkey with pictures for you to, you know, the whole thing. So I totally get what you're talking about, man. For you, as you were on this journey, what was the toughest part of you dealing with the come up? What did you find like, fuck, I hate this part of this, man? What was it?
I can identify three times where I'm like, what did I just get myself into?
Really?
Number one, before this, I was executive vice president of Sir Kensington's. We sold to Unilever. It was a a gourmet ketchup mayonnaise mustard brand. Very random. My buddy Scott came up with the idea while we were in college. I literally was first employee of like selling it and everything.
Nice.
We were like rags to riches story in the sense of we grew it. Now the exit wasn't as perfect as we wanted to be, but like, look, we sold to Unilever. It was awesome. I went from like hustling for 6 years to like get to the point where the company was being sold. And then I jumped off the top of the totem pole and went all the way back down and started a business with my brother-in-law. When Tyler came back from Pennsylvania, where our product's made, with the first production run of our ginger beer, he shows up. We had a Honda Civic hybrid that he packed in 26 big cases. This dude is a monster. He's 6'5", right? So like he's already like in a clown car to begin with.
Right.
But the actual frame of the car was beyond the wheel, so it must have been rubbed. The tires looked like shit, but he drove it like 3 hours back. We open up the box and the labels are all fucked up. Like wow. Just like totally like some are torn off. Like it just looks so bad. And I came from a world where like perfection on product and imagery was so key. And I felt that, and Tyler felt that as well. And I remember I was like carrying the cases up, but I wanted to stay positive because I was like, if I show that I'm disappointed to Tyler or vice versa, we're just going to like feel terrible about this. But when I was upstairs, I'm like looking at the cases and like, I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, what did I just do? Like I'm starting a cocktail mixer brand. Like, come on. Like you had a cushy job. Like, but that was number one. That was like dark, right? Like, you know, where you're like, why did I do this? Right. There was number two, I would say when we hired an employee and it was our first experience where we got wronged in the situation. They were doing some inappropriate stuff. And I remember thinking, my God, like, how could you like want to do this to a small business? Like it's a family here, right?
You're like, people suck, huh?
When people that suck, happens. Right? And you have this like bad taste and you're like, what are you doing? Like literally, yeah. What are you doing? Like, come on. And then that's what I also, that was like a defining moment was don't expect things out of people that will disappoint you. Meaning like, just stay positive with it and just be like, you know, whatever. Like, you know, I got to roll with it and I got to hope that I can find better talent next time. The third was during COVID when the tough decisions were going down about like all bars and restaurants shutting down. Mind you, half of our business is bars and restaurants. We just taken on the Barstool deal. Legitimately was like, what did I just do? Like, wow. Like, what are we going to do to come out of this, right? Keep all of our employees on, grow the business. We had to pivot so quickly, but like, man, March, April, May, June was ugly. I hated last year, but now I love it. Made us who we are today. We came out swinging in 2021, and I think it's because we went through hell and back.
Dude, I love that story, man. My story is I'm the biggest failure in the history of Miami baseball by far. My dad beat the shit out of me when I would fail. He did it in front of everybody. Nobody stepped in, not even my mom, nothing. But some way, somehow, I turned very, like my wires got crossed, and I felt that everything I was doing, Josh, was happening for a reason, was happening for a reason, was happening for a reason. And when I failed, J-Lo was doing a TV show here in Miami called South Beach. Ironically, I got casted in it. I go, you know what? I'm going to act, bro. And I'm going to leave Miami. I'm going to get in a car. Everybody that I knew was kind of playing it safe. They were kind of getting married here, whatever. I'm like, fuck that shit. Mm-hmm. So I got in a 2006 Toyota Corolla, and I drove to Los Angeles. I slept in the Hollywood Hills for 6 months. I didn't know a single person. I slept in the hills because I thought the studios was in Hollywood. And I learned there the power of your mind and why people go crazy. I would shower and shave at the Equinox in West Hollywood. I would sneak in there.
Great spot.
Tremendous spot. But now my best friend actually owns Sushia right there next to Le Petit Four. Have you ever had sushi there? That's my boy's spot. But I didn't know a single person. And I sat there and I go, if I can make it through this, everything else in my life is going to be easy. Bro, when I went through that, I did the same thing. When I went to Las Vegas, I didn't know a single person. And I got to the top of the nightclub world. And kind of like you when you sold your first venture, I was like, bro, is this the way the legend's gonna die? In a night in a Las Vegas nightclub. My first time ever playing golf was Shadow Creek with Michael Jordan.
Not bad.
Not bad for the Jordan Invitational. It was like I go, what else? What else am I
doing? Something you just said is the most important piece. And I think in terms of mental health awareness, the power of the mind is scary. What a pendulum it can be, right? You are an example of somebody that went to the most positive depths of the world. You radiate positive energy. Even when you're looking, you're a serious, intimidating, good-looking dude, but you radiate positivity. I think what's so scary is that when those demons come out, how it can go the other way if you don't overcome it. And that's why I feel for people that go through it.
Dude, that's why I come at you with so much empathy, and I come at you with, and when I say you, any guest that I have on, but let's talk you in particular, because you don't have a lot of empathetic people looking at you right now, unless it's people on your team or people you do business with or people you partnered up with. Everybody's like, fuck that guy. Right? Because that's how life is. It's just is that way. The guy is
always looking at a glass half empty on purpose for you.
Half empty. No. For you, it's full. For you, he has everything. Nobody knows anything you're going through. Right? So I'm like, man, this guy has nobody. If in his group, yeah, but so I go, if I can, and I always do this, if I can come and let this guy know that the most important thing is the subconscious mind, bro. The subconscious mind only knows what you feed it. If you can control that, you can control anything. And the fact that you have the pedigree to come up with a Tesla, which you didn't know that was going to become what it's going to become. Who can you figure? The fact that you had the understanding to see the Barstool movement. The fact that you had 19 years old to be able to be with these old school beverage guys and be like, oh, you know, that worked. This didn't work. Why are these guys lazy? Why was that? Dude, you're on route to be one of the most special brand mixer guys of our generation. You maybe don't know that yet because you're a baby still. You know, I'm 42. You're 31. I got 11 years on you, bro. Right? So what you have ahead of you is so special that there's only two ways you're going to go, bro. You're either going to win or you're going to kill. You're going to destroy this whole thing, right?
Yep.
So that's why I feel the whole thing of like, bro, you're in a special spot, man. And now that you got a big win under your belt, because anybody else can go, yeah, the 7.5 million, whatever. Dude, that's a big step, man, because from 7.5 comes 750. You know what I'm saying? You can't go to 750 without the 7.5.
Yeah.
That's a huge move, man.
I think what you're describing is like the beauty of all of it is that, yes, it's me out there in my own world, but I'm part of a team. And like you just said, in my ecosystem, we support each other. There are people out there that are gunning for us. I'd be lying to you if I didn't know the people that are trying to sink our ship.
Of course.
But the reality is that I would say our company refuses to let that get in the way of our bright future. I also quickly realized, similar to in sports, that a team is much more powerful than the individual. There are certain sports where obviously that's not true, but I'd say any sport that I've participated in. It's why surrounding yourself with people that have that same mind share, that are thinking, how can we get you or us to the top? That's who I want to be around. I've cut out the negativity in my life, the haters, the people who are just like, yeah, you know, you could be like, sky's blue. And they're like, is it blue? There's some clouds in it. And you're like,
right.
Not gonna convince you otherwise. Right. And it took me a long ass time to get rid of those people. But I'd say I use it as fuel and motivation. And I think a lot of people should look at it that way. People being negative, it's a good thing. You're doing something right.
1000%, bro. 1000%. Levi, the French bulldog, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Is he a positive dude or a negative dude?
Levi is I am his human, right? Yeah. And well, I should say my girlfriend is his human too, but that's my dude. He's stoic. He's a blue French bulldog that is just looks like a bodybuilder up front with like a tiny little waist in the back. But it's funny. I always wanted a dog growing up, and my parents would never get me one. I came from a divorced household, and I never knew they were divorced when I was like 2 and a half. So I would always split time, right? It would be 7 days on, 7 days on with the other or off. It's funny. My mom said to me the other day, because she sees how much I'm obsessed with this dog, because we have our routine. We go to the beach in the morning. He runs around like a madman. It looks like the Tasmanian devil going out there because he gets the zoomies.
Right.
Well, my mom said to me, she goes, you know, my biggest regret of raising you is not getting you a dog early on, because you thrive off of that companionship. You ask anybody that knows me, I'll make about, I don't know, 70 cold calls a day just for sales regardless, because I still love selling. But I'll also talk to about 40 friends throughout the day. I can't be alone. I hate being alone. I'm always in constant contact with people. That dog is like a magnetic force to me. And she's like, you know, I regret not having a dog with you when you were going back and forth. Cause a lot of people don't realize a hard part about divorce is that like you're creating your own like life in two different homes.
Right.
And the dog would be that consistent force that goes with you each way. Right. And when she said that, I was like, you know, you're right. Like, I mean, I'd be in church every Christmas Eve and I'd be, you know, praying. I'd be like, God, I'm asking for one gift only. Please get me a dog. Please give me a dog.
Dude, I love that story. Here's my dog story. I'm telling you, man, I think, so as I analyze I'm obsessed with the idea of you right now. It seems from the research that you've been with your chick for a while, marriage is probably coming soon, then kids. I'm obsessed with the idea of boys with their dads, right? Just because I look at my dad's life, and my dad's the youngest of 15 kids. We're from Cuba, left a communist country to come to the United States. Super smart dude. All he wanted in life was to have us around during this time that he'd be a grandfather. And he did the completely reverse, pushed us all away. Nobody talks to the guy. My mom divorced him after 30 years. Like, it's just horrible, man. And he prepared me. The irony is, he prepared me for everything in life except to deal with him. One day we're in the backyard. We moved to this part here in Miami that it was a new neighborhood that didn't, you know, when you move in new, and these are cookie cutter houses, there's no fence. You got to put in your own fence, whatever. Josh, one day this beautiful chow chow rolls right on in. And I'm like, oh, that's our dog. Oh my God. So we get Brownie, a little chow chow, and Brownie's the guy. What happens? Brownie goes up, and my dad didn't want to neuter the dog because it felt like it was neutering himself. That's how this dude thinks. So this dude in the middle of the night, what happens? He starts escaping to go be a bachelor and to make his moves. And Brownie would be in the middle of the house when he would come in. The dog would be in the front there, chilling by the front door. He couldn't get in through the hole he created to leave, that kind of thing. Bro, one night without me knowing, the dog is at some neighborhood messing around with somebody else's dogs. They call. My dad comes and tells my mom, do me a favor, go grab the dog, put him in a car, drive for like 15 minutes, let him out of the car.
Don't bring him back.
And don't bring him back. Right? So I wake up the following morning and I always met, he's gone. And it was almost like, if I look at my life now and I try to put the serendipity of things, it's like that guy was preparing me that if you're going to win in life, you're not going to be attached to anything other than whatever it is. And that's me trying to find the resilience of why.
You're looking for the silver linings, all of it.
And everything. Consistent.
All bias aside, I'd say that's a pretty terrible move. But
it's a horrible move. But as I try to put that in my head now, and then I look at me, that I've probably rescued about 30 pit bulls, right? Found them homes when I was in Las Vegas, stuff like that. So I don't know if you think about this, because you're going to be a dad soon, man, and you think about your relationship with your dad. The people who have the best upbringing don't become the greats. The greats are people who push the needle, are guys that are come from, and women, but adversity. Do you think about that at all?
I think about it constantly, because I like being the underdog in most situations. You know what's funny is like I always think about with my upbringing, I was very blessed to be raised by two educators who placed a massive amount of value in education. Sad story of that is my sister, it clicked for her. My sister has been at Google for the past 12, 13 years.
Nice.
Absolute power woman, director level, kills it at Google. Like, utmost respect for my sister, Jenny. For me, education was never going to be a thing. I focused more on my efforts of how I could get out of going to class without getting in trouble than actually just reading and showing up. It's not like what I was doing instead of going to class was that beneficial. But I set this the high school school record for most classes cut without a expulsion. 237 cuts in a year, my sophomore year.
Josh, and that's because you were just a people person, right? Like people like just...
He would be like, "Yo, like, oh, we're gonna go to the 7-Eleven, go get Slurpees." I'm like, "Yeah, go for a Slurpee." It wasn't the Slurpee. I just wanted to hang out with people. I wanted, you know, and like, I'll never forget if Mr. Perez ever hears this. Mr. Perez was the biggest fan of our baseball team, and my sophomore year, I got pulled up to varsity, and he was like, "Don't even worry about coming to class. Do your thing. I got you." And he gave me a B, and I never went to that English class the entire semester.
Wow. So,
but, you know, the hardest part for me growing up, which is also I'm so glad it happened that way, was I grew up in a town where it was all ridiculously wealthy people.
Nice.
The Bay Area, and I'm sure you know of the Bay Area, but, you know, Facebook's there, Apple's there, all the VCs, Menlo Park. I went to a school where my dad was the principal until sixth grade. And it would have cost me $40,000 a year if he wasn't principal to go there.
Damn. So your network's out of control then, huh?
But the crazy part is that, like, I always was jealous early on. And it wasn't even jealous. It was envious. I was never negative about it, but I was.
What were you envious? Because I have something interesting that I'll share with you. But what were you envious of?
I was envious of the fact that the kids would get picked up right at 3:30 when school would get out. And I'd be with the schoolyard kids till like 5:30 when my mom would be super late. Because my mom was dean of students of a Catholic high school in our hometown. And she worked her ass off. She would work so hard. My dad wouldn't be able to take us home because he'd be going up to University of San Francisco to teach night classes after being a principal. Both of them wanted to provide me with every opportunity known to man.
For and you and your sister.
Exactly. So that we would fit into that situation. But I go to these kids' houses and this is going to sound so random, but I remember when they would have like a nanny there or something like that full time. And we'd be like, you know, in fifth grade or whatever, but they would be there like essentially as the mom. But I remember when we got to my buddy's house and she had laid out grilled cheeses cut and whatever ways, and we had like different snacks and we had sodas and stuff like that. And I remember being like, oh my God, like why the fuck doesn't my family do this? Right. And then I like, and I'm like, I am spoiled in that sense that I even I had friends like that, right? Like the average person doesn't. And then you drive and see the entire world and you go across this country and you realize the poverty that people grow up in. I'm fucking envious of cut grilled cheeses when people like literally don't eat certain days.
Yeah, but to your empathy, you don't know any better. It's the world where we grew up in. You know, I was the same way. So my mom cleaned houses. And when we always got stuck, I always got stuck going to summer school, but those 2 weeks that summer school didn't start, I would go with her. Me and my sister would go with her to these cleaned houses, and where my dad, who was always cheap, would buy generic brand cereal and stuff like that.
My dad would go to Walmart, and we just literally, whatever the cheapest was.
Yeah, bro. Instead of getting the toucan Fruit Loops, you get the walrus, you know, you get the imitation. Dude, bro. And I remember
What was the soda brand that you would always get instead of Coca-Cola? It wasn't even RC. It was like...
Well, we got lucky because since he worked for Pepsi, at least...
Oh, you had the hook.
We had a little bit of a hookup with at least, bro. But just my dad was just... My dad was so bad that my dad used to get us in a car, drive to Naples, look at hotels, and drive back. That was a vacation. That was it. We get in a car, drive, and like what I tell people, man, if it wasn't for the abuse and that fear of a guy hitting you or getting bad, it's family bonding experiences. But where he fucks it up is that there's always that turn that, like, oh my God, we get kicked out of a party because my dad didn't know how to behave. We did this, we did that. Just horrible, man. But as I look at it, I just, as now and as I'm in a position where I'm like the kid whisperer now, I get about 500 to 1,000 DMs of kids and parents all over the country reaching out to me. And I tell them this, and I want to see if you agree with this. Sports, to me, is a relationship play. It's where you build relationships. I had on, probably 2 weeks ago, the last team that I coached in Beverly Hills. They're a little bit younger than you. They're now 25, 24, 23 years old. In that team, I kept in touch with three kids. One of them, Justin Shagarian. Justin co-founded Psalm Sleep. You heard of Psalm Sleep?
I don't think I have.
It's like an energy drink, but to go to sleep.
I love
it's
that.
It's a drink to go to sleep. Psalm, I think it's S-O-L-M. I'm going to link you guys up to there. He's in Beverly Hills, the official partner of MLB, NBA, stuff like that. Really big deal. A kid that I worked with, and he was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Co-created that. Stevie Dunn, who his dad created Munchkin, the baby product company. Heard of Munchkin?
Yes.
They're pretty up there. And then the last one who I just had, who surprisingly did so good on the episode, bro, Tony T, who his dad Ted is the CEO of Netflix. And I tell people, sports, relationship,
yep.
Not win or lose. Not my son is better than yours, Josh. Not, oh, you don't pick my son. Relationship, man. How important have relationships been to you?
I mean, I can tell you right now, I had a buddy who literally posted an entire bag from CVS with all of our Owen SKUs in it from a guy I played baseball with in high school, summer league, not even literally like on my regular baseball team. And I responded to it because he tagged me in the photo and I said, dude, like your support, you don't even get it. Your support means more than you'll ever know. Meaning the fact that I've had some impact on your life and vice versa, where we were cool enough to that you're buying my product and we haven't talked in like 20 years. Awesome. I can't tell you. That is my favorite part of this. Like I would lie. I'd be lying if I said like that, oh, I'm in it to win it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like the reality is that those small moments of people in my life that are still supporting me that I haven't kept in touch with and I want to keep in touch with everybody. The reality is you can't.
Yeah.
But absolutely. I do make a point of acknowledging each person that supports us and I make sure that they know how much it means to me. And it comes from a genuine place, but it's funny that sports, to me, I think similar to you, I felt there was too much pressure on me early on. And the mentality that you just mentioned of like, it's not about win or lose, it's about the relationships. I think I would have even been better if that were the case.
We all would have been. It would have been fun. We would have competed.
Exactly. And what I wish there was more of with youth is helping people understand that their creativity or their inability to sit still can be harnessed and used to their advantage. And I think that we've always been raised in a society that basically says to you, oh, like if you don't color inside the lines, there's something wrong with you and you'll never figure it out. Now it's getting better where people are, you know, starting to be like, you know, want people to be entrepreneurs and back them up with their ideas and give them the tools to succeed. But the reality is in sports, that win or lose mentality overshadows the true meaning of sport, which is sportsmanship, team, bonding, networking, right? And when I played intramural basketball, I remember like freshman year, I was out there networking, but convincing the best players to be on my team because right. I knew I wasn't going to beat like it at my size or whatever. I knew I wouldn't win every game by myself. So I go after the guys that could shoot the best in the team, in the gym, the tallest dudes. But I think the networking aspect of sports is something that is definitely not talked about enough. And if you can convey that to younger kids and say, hey, of course you should want to win every game. But the reality is the relationships that you're making there, they'll be a part of your life the rest of your life if you handle them.
Josh, and the thing is, it's not the kids, bro.
It's the parents.
It's the parents.
Yeah. Trying to relive their glory days through a child when they sucked.
1,000%.
Oh, I put a, you know, when I hear new dads being like, oh, got a golf club in my kid's hand already. Like, I'm going to be blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you're projecting. You're literally projecting your insecurities on your kid. Why not turn them into the best cold caller ever at an early age? Teach them how to sell. Teach them how to, you know, fill out a balance sheet. Stuff like that.
Teach them how to
matter.
Teach them how to make other people feel good. How about you teach your son, hey, man, go up to that guy and tell him that shirt looks good. Go up to, hey, man, that's a cool hairstyle, bro. Hey, man, I like your shirt. Just stuff. It's crazy. I just posted the episode today with Rory Sabatini, who's a pretty good golfer. And his dad, his parents were both golfers. And they just took him to the range. They didn't force him to go. And he just, the more he did, the more they saw. And you're absolutely right, man. I've always said this. I think we should eliminate Algebra 2. We should have calculus, all this stuff, and put in how to be empathetic, how to be vulnerable as a dude, how to say you don't know, how to say you're sorry, stuff that we just think it's a given, and nobody has a fucking clue of what's going on.
You know, the one thing that my dad was most proud of me as a young age, this is very random, was my ability to shake a hand and look somebody in the eye. And people would always give him that compliment. And it was because he told me, you're going to be way weaker than anybody that you're shaking the hand. He's like, if someone that's fragile, don't break their hand. But he's like, you have first impressions are everything. And he always says, you shake it as firm as you can and look them dead in the eye. Even if it's uncomfortable, you're intimidated. That sets the tone for what happens next. And when you get the jellyfish handshake from anybody, you're like, fuck's that about?
And right? People hate on the kids, and it's not the kids' fault because it's the parents that are not doing that. That's the thing. Two more questions, bro. Two more questions. What's your favorite type of music?
I have a very eclectic music.
You can hear one CD or one person.
I mean, Billy Joel, without a doubt.
What Billy Joel song?
Scenes of Italian Restaurant. But that entire album, Living in New York City, is like the most relevant album of all time, of like growing up into a man in New York City. But Scenes of Italian Restaurant, it reminds me of my girlfriend and I. It's our favorite song together.
It's crazy. So when my dad only had respect for me once I made it in Vegas, not that dude was in heaven, bro.
Because it was showy, right? And he could be like, to his friends, look at my
yes. boy. Yes, he didn't have any friends, but just look at my son. And I was the fucking guy because I went old school and I put everybody in the Bellagio in my pocket. Like literally I had so much power and I never used it because all I did was work and take care of people. So I built such arsenal of like, give you a perfect example. My boy, John George, who's the chef of Prime 112, he used to come to Hyde and I spent Thanksgiving with that guy.
John George, first person to buy Sir Kensington's ketchup at ABC Kitchen.
There you go. So he would come and he would cook for me. He's literally cooking for me. And I'm sitting there like, listen, bro, I don't need too much. He's like, no, man, let me make you. It's crazy. But Julian Serrano, who has two restaurants there, same thing, man. And one weekend that he was there, he's like, oh, I want to go to Billy Joel. Billy Joel, Billy Joel, Cuban accent. Billy Joel, Billy Joel. I go, I got you, bro. I call over. I think it was at the Wynn. They get a limo. My man goes backstage. They hooked him. The dude was in heaven, bro. In heaven, man. Josh, with you, man, I'm so proud of you. I want you to not only win, man, but I want you to really attack that part of your heart that's telling you to share your story, to share your wins, your losses and stuff with more people, because what's going to happen is you're really in a phenomenal position to help so many young people that are like, fuck, man, I'm not an Elon Musk, but man, Josh, look at Josh's story. I can do that, man. So I couldn't wish you more success and more
Appreciate good things
to come your way, my man.
You
Before
well.
I let you go, any questions for me, man? Anything I can help you with?
No, I can't tell you how enjoyable this was. You know, a lot of these situations, you don't know what to expect. And I had some expectations going in, but if I could start every day off like this with a positivity hour, I would do it. But I admire not only what you're doing, but The fact that when you ask a question and I can tell that you're actually listening and you're actually thinking about that, how I'm responding to that, it's something that is the most admirable trait in anybody. An active listener that actually cares is the most rare person in the world. So I have no questions for you, but I just wanted to say thank you. And this was amazing. And then where are you right now? In Miami?
I'm in Miami, bro. When you come down here, we gotta do something.
Be there in a couple weeks. I might have to take you for some cocktails at Komodo or Swan.
Let's do it. You coming down? You'll meet my wife. We'll come down. We'll do something. We'll hit the golf.
You might meet Levi, the French guy, in person.
I'm down with that, dude. I'm so down with that. Where can the people find you? Where do we want to push them to?
Nationwide CVS. 8,000 stores just got that deal. Publix, if you're in the Southeast. Kroger throughout the country. Safeway, Albertsons, Bonds. And then the easiest way, if you don't want to go to the store, go on Amazon Prime. Have all of our SKUs. But, yeah, thank you for letting me tell my part of the story. And thanks for having me.
I love it. We got a big bilingual community, buddy. So get ready. The Latins love their alcohol.
Grapefruit and lime pairs beautifully with tequila.
There it is. Don't leave. I'm gonna end up with you the right way. Don't leave. Boom. There it is. Thank you guys so much for listening, for showing love. Please go give them love. Give Owens Mixers love. You should try them. Very good. Great reviews. He sent me a ton of them. I strongly recommend it. I don't know if a lot of people here in Miami use Owens Mixers, but let's go. Let's get the word out. Let's use it. Let's support my boy. He's doing great things. And I'll see you in the next one. Remember, at the end of the day, two things you can control is your effort and your attitude. And please go hard and do your thing. See you on the next one.